Are there ever times when going all Roth isn't the best strategy? How do you determine the break-even point on doing Roth conversions? That's today on Your Money, Your Wealth podcast number 477, as Joe and Big Al spitball on marginal versus effective tax rates for Joseph Allen, saving to after-tax brokerage or pre-tax 403b for Gigi in Illinois, the arithmetic of Roth conversions for Carl Spackler in Florida, and the mega backdoor Roth for Hefe in Texas. For something completely different, we'll wrap it up with a discussion of tax forms that need to be filed for your solo 401k, depending on the account balance, for Smitty in the Villages. I'm producer Andy Last, and here are the hosts of Your Money, Your Wealth, Joe Anderson, CFP, and Big Al Clopine, CPA.
All right, here we go. We got Dear Roth Brothers, your friend Joseph Allen. Joseph Allen, is he our friend? You know, Joe?
You know, it's a great name, Joseph and Allen.
Yep. Wow.
His point here.
Then here we go. You didn't pick up that name last time I wrote it in.
Oh, I guess we should keep reading.
Yes, yeah. You could tell we're really prepared here. I sometimes dabble in other personal finance podcasts and came across one that made me a little angry recently. As a firm Roth believer, this other podcast tried to showcase why going all Roth isn't the best strategy. All right. Their argument is that maxing out a traditional 401k will end up giving you more money in retirement than maxing out a Roth 401k because it results in more net investable dollars. This results in more returns because you are investing pre-tax and then investing what the tax savings are elsewhere. The argument also rests its case, saying that you currently pay the marginal tax rate as a working human, but that in retirement, you'll be paying the effective tax rate, which will always be lower. Therefore, Roth is not essential because the taxes you pay in retirement will always be lower.
Yeah, you know, when there's words always and never, you know, it's a little flawed.
But
I mean, that does happen.
The argument rests, he's saying, all right, you're currently paying the marginal rate as a working human.
Yes.
Yeah, you're still paying the effective rate as a working human.
Yeah, but basically they're implying you'll be in a lower tax bracket in retirement. You'll have more dollars because you're paying less tax. Even though you still have to pay tax, you're paying tax at a lower rate. This also presumes you're saving the tax savings, which almost nobody does.
But he's saying effective rate versus marginal rate. So when you're working, you're in the marginal rate, but when you're retired, you're going to just calculate your effective rate.
Well, yeah, but that's false. Yes, you're right. I mean, it's marginal rate in both cases.
Or effective rate both cases.
Or yeah, however you want to compare it, it should be apples to apples.
Yes.
But I think the point they're making is that many people, even most, would be in a lower bracket.
I would agree with that 1,000%. Most people will be in a lower tax bracket because most people haven't saved.
Correct.
All right. I'll read on.
Okay.
I've been listening for a while to your podcast, and I like it much better than the other one I'm referring to.
Yeah. I wonder which one it is.
Well, your name's Joseph Allen.
Yeah, right.
And I don't recall this argument ever being brought up. Some assumptions they make with this argument is the person will retire before 59 and a half, and the person is a high earner and a high saver. And they must invest what the tax savings are in a pre-tax contribution. Obviously, if you spend the money that is saved, this doesn't work. The analysis also uses a 4% withdrawal rate. So as my wife and I both max out our Roth IRAs and contribute to Roth 401ks and are doing backdoor Roths because we don't want to deal with the taxes in retirement and plan on retiring at age 55. Does this argument have legs on it? This podcast ran numbers and seemed to have data to back up what you would end up with more money maxing out traditional 401ks than a Roth 401k. Obviously, they used a lot of assumptions and made up numbers, and they didn't add up to me. They didn't add up to me. All right.
Okay.
What are your thoughts about marginal and effective tax rates in retirement?
Okay.
Wife and I make combined $140,000 a year and have around $106,000 combined in Roth IRAs, $40,000 in a rollover IRA that we are backdooring to those Roth accounts. He means converting. $46,000 in a brokerage account, $72,000 in cash. We spend around $32,000 a year in save and invest the rest. I'm 30, she's 28. We also bought a house at the end of the year for about $300,000, still owe $240,000 on it. Are we wrong in going all Roth? Should we contribute to traditional 401ks instead of Roth 401ks? No, ice cold Keystone Light.
Okay.
Oh man,
I get Joe excited.
I love Mike.
You can picture that, right?
Oh yeah, he's my drink of choice. And where does this guy live? And my wife likes a good little vodka in Fresca. Oh, when's the last time you had a Fresca?
It's been quite some time.
I drive a GMC Canyon, and she drives a Hyundai Tucson.
Tucson.
All right. Thanks for all you do. Podcast is the best out there. Well, thank you, Joseph Allen.
That's very nice.
Yeah. She drinks Fresca, and he's drinking Keystone Light.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I should have mentioned he's in Wichita, Kansas.
Oh, there you go.
Midwest. Oh, Kansas. Okay, like, yeah.
The flyover state.
Flyover state, that's what you call it?
Yeah.
Got it.
Okay. So let's break this down.
Okay.
Couple of things here. Given his income, yeah. First off, don't listen to any other podcast.
Oh, wow.
I disagree with that. You gotta listen to all sides.
I'm kidding. No, I think what you're doing is right on. And there's a couple of ways. First of all, marginal and effective rate. Let's explain that first.
Okay. So the effective rate is your blended rate. So in other words, you look at the taxes you paid, divide that into taxable income. That's your effective rate.
So I made $100,000. I paid $10,000 in tax. My effective tax rate is 10%.
10%. Exactly right. Yep. 10%. That's your effective rate. That's blended. Let's actually say your taxes are 20. That'd be more realistic.
Okay.
So we can
sure.
do the numbers right.
Yeah.
So $20,000, you made $100,000, 20% is your effective rate. But when you look at your income, you're actually in the 24% bracket. And so that's what's called the marginal rate. So there's a 10% bracket, 15, 22, 24. Let's just say you're in the, let's say you're in the 22% bracket, just to come up with that. So in other words, some of your taxes were in the 10%, some were in the 15, 12. Some were 20. 12. Wow. You're right. I am tired today. So some are 22%, but they blend out to 20, right? So that's the effective rate. But what's important when you're talking about a Roth conversion is how much tax do you pay if you have more income? So that's why marginal rate is important. The highest rate, that's what you always use in this comparison.
So I'll just go with that.
All right.
So you will have an effective rate in retirement, and you will also have a marginal rate in retirement. So if they're comparing, well, you're only going to pay the effective rate in retirement and not the marginal rate, they're just playing with words here. Second of all, so let's say you have to think of it like this. You save $100,000 and you save it pre-tax, and that $100,000 grows, but you save 20, let's just assume 25%.
Right? Yep.
So $100,000 goes into the old 401k plan, and then you didn't have to, it's pre-tax, so you saved $25,000.
Okay, yeah. Right?
So that $25,000 of tax savings is what they're saying that you must save.
Right.
So then you put that $25,000 in a brokerage account, and that brokerage account is going to have the same rate of return as your 401k.
Right.
So the $100,000, let's say, grows to $1 million.
Okay.
All right. So, and then that $25,000 is going to grow to $250,000.
Okay.
That's the same rate of return over the same time frame.
Right.
And then you look at your statement and it's like, Al, I got $1,250,000.
Yep.
I'm killing it.
Yep.
I have so much more money. All you Rothers, what do you call themselves? Roth brothers.
Yeah.
So you're not getting that $25,000 savings. So you're going to put $100,000 into your Roth plan, but you don't get the $25,000 of savings. So you have no side account that is going to grow.
Right.
So you're comparing the $100,000 that is growing versus the pre-tax person that has $100,000 plus $25,000. On the surface, you would think, well, I would much rather have $125,000 all day growing for me because I'm going to have $1.25 million
right.
at retirement.
Yeah.
That $100,000 grows to $1 million. Well, this is a no-brainer, isn't it?
Yeah. So you're right. You're comparing apples and oranges. So one that, you know, the 401k IRA, you have to pay taxes when you pull that money out. Now, why don't you finish your example and then I'm going to make mine.
But what they're missing is that, all right, that $1 million that I have to pull out, I have to pay taxes on it, right?
Correct.
So I pull the money out. Let's assume the same tax rate. It's 25%. So I pull the $1 million out. I got to pay $250,000 of taxes.
Right.
And so I take the $250,000 that I saved in my brokerage account to pay the taxes to get my equal million.
Right.
So it's exactly the same.
You end up in the same spot.
But it's, if I'm in the Roth, I could name 10 things that would be better if it's in the Roth.
Yeah. So here's how I'm going to say it. Without going through an example, I've run this a million times. If you are in the same tax bracket, you end up with the same amount of dollars, same. But hardly people usually are not in the same tax brackets, and there's all kinds of other variables, just like you mentioned. So the first thing I would say is most people, when they put the money into the 401k, the IRA, they get a tax deduction, they do not save the tax savings.
Right. This example said you must save it, but no one does.
They spend it. So right off the bat, that's a faulty assumption because it's hardly ever followed. So that's number one. Here's another thing that is missed all the time, right? Which is let's say you have money in a Roth and money in an IRA, right? And having that balance, maybe you can put your asset classes that have higher expected long-term returns, like stocks, in the Roth. And maybe you put your lower expected asset growth, like bonds, maybe in your regular IRA. So yes, the stocks are more volatile. You're going to have years where you're happy in the Roth, years where you're not. But if you look out 20, 30, 40 years, you'll be likely very happy with the stocks in the Roth. You'll end up with a lot more because none of that is taxed.
You will also have a lot more flexibility. If everything is in your pre-tax account, I don't know where tax rates are going to go, right? So you're taking the uncertainty of taxes off the table. If you believe tax rates are going to go lower, yeah, then they go pre-tax all day long. This guy's 30-some years old, and he's saving a ton of money. If he saved all in the pre-tax accounts, he might be in the same tax bracket or higher. You have to run the projections. Even if he was going to be in a little bit lower tax bracket, does he have the discipline to save the tax savings?
Right.
If he does, well, then that might be an argument.
Right. Well, and here's another factor. When you're in your 30s, on average, you make less than when you're, let's say, 50, for example. So in your 30s, you know, if you kind of follow the norms, why wouldn't you put almost all your money, if not all, in Roth, knowing that you're going to be in higher tax brackets later in your higher earning years? Yeah, maybe you can get a little bit more balance then, but certainly when you're younger, I would do Roth all the time just because of the potential higher tax brackets in the future as your salary goes up.
I want the uncertainty of taxes off the table. Alan is a CPA, so he wants to run and crunch the numbers to the penny, and I get that, and that's why he's my partner. But when you look at real life, and as you're saving, out of sight, out of mind, I would just keep plowing as much money into a tax-free environment as possibly can. Because when you look at your balance of that $1 million in your 401k plan, and it's the Roth 401k, you're going to say, that money is all mine. I'm not partners with the IRS here. It's all mine. If I have money in a 401k plan that was pre-tax and it's $1 million, I'm going to be like, man, I got to pay the piper. I got to pay the toll for taking some of this money out. I'm not saying go 100% Roth. That's not what I'm saying. I want you to be diversified. I want you to have money in a pre-tax account. I want you to have money in a Roth account. I want you to have money in a brokerage account to give you the most flexible in control over your taxes long term. So it really depends on what your tax bracket is today, how much money that you're saving, when do you want to retire, and blah, blah, blah. That's what the strategy and planning is all about. But just off the surface, I think you need to do a lot more analysis on your specific situation before you kind of make these decisions.
Yeah. And when you hear different people talking about things, if they use words like always and never, it's pretty much never correct. I will say that's when you can use that. Because now there's lots of examples where you shouldn't do Roth. Like, let's say you're 64 years old, you're making a ton of money, you're going to retire the following year, you're in the highest tax bracket, and then 65 to 75, you know, before your RMD, you can do lots of Roth conversions in much lower brackets. Why not get the tax deduction right now? There's a lot of ways, there's a lot of times when you shouldn't do Roth, but you wouldn't never say always and never. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to have the balance.
Try the free retirement calculator at easyretirement.com and spitball your own retirement readiness. That's EASIretirement.com. Spend just a few minutes to create a login, enter your income, savings, and expenses, and find out if you're on track. track. You can adjust your spending or savings and see in an instant how it changes your entire retirement future. Switch between optimistic, average, or pessimistic assumptions for inflation and returns. Test different budgeting scenarios and withdrawal strategies. EASI stands for Education Assessment Strategy Implementation. You need all four to create a successful retirement plan, and the free retirement calculator at easyretirement.com can help. Then you want to take the next step. Schedule a one-on-one with a live human financial professional from right there in the calculator to review your results and create even more sophisticated strategies to meet your retirement needs. Start calculating your retirement wellness now for free at easyretirement.com. That's EASI retirement.com.
We got Gigi from Illinois writes in. She goes, hey, Andy, Joe, Big Al, quick question. I'm a high earner, diligent saver. Would it make more sense to contribute to an after-tax brokerage account or max out my pre-tax 403B? We already max out the Roth 401k and Roth 457. Assuming the money grows for 20 years, would I be better off using a brokerage account and paying capital gains or paying ordinary income tax on the RMDs on my 403B? Similar question here.
Yeah, very similar. Okay.
She drives a Tesla in a 1991 mini truck. My hubby drives a Ram. And for the record, our truck beds are the same size.
Oh.
Drinks, IPA for him, poured it for me, and a little red wine for the both of us. All right. Details. Let's get into the details.
Okay.
Here. Here's our income, $400,000, ages 43, side hustle, $120. All right. That's a pretty good side hustle.
Yeah.
All right, so expenses, $10,000 a month. So they want to spend $120,000 a year in retirement. 401k, $675, 10% Roth, maxing out. 403b, $320, 457, $220 plus another $40 in Roth. Pension is going to be $8,300 a month. Social Security at $1,500. His Social Security, $3,500. Combined 401k rollovers is $300. Combined Roths is $135 in another brokerage account of about $500,000. Yes, we save more than $114,000 a year. You go, Gigi.
That's fantastic.
Adding all this stuff up, I get like a couple million bucks.
Yeah, I get a little bit more. 2.4 is what I get.
Okay, 2.4. Sounds good. Most of that is in pre-tax, what, $200,000 roughly in Roth, $500,000 in after-tax.
Yeah.
All right. Outstanding debt, little tractor loan. Oh, I suppose... If you have a tractor loan, that's why you need a mini truck.
I think so. Yep.
20%, 2.5 years remaining. Got a couple kids, ages 14 and 11. And let's see, $45,000. Plan to sell house one. Okay. So Gigi's asking here, should we save more into the brokerage account or should we continue to put money into a pre-tax account? They want to retire in 20 years. They're 43 and they got $2.5 million.
Right, right.
They want to spend $10,000 a month, Alan.
Sure.
She's going to have a pension of $100,000 a year.
Right.
So $10,000 a month in 20 years, what, it's going to be $200,000 a year, probably in living expenses?
Probably. And not only a pension for $100,000, but you add Social Security, that's another $60,000 just right there in today's numbers.
Right, in today's numbers. So
right.
their fixed income is going to be pretty close to their living expenses.
Given, you know, I don't know what the assumptions are here, but it may be about the same.
Right. And so they got $1.5 million already in retirement accounts at 43 years old.
Right, right.
And they're totally maxing out all these plans, saving $100,000 a year. Should they go brokerage or continue to go pre-tax? Because there's no, they're already maxing out the Roth options.
Yeah.
So after the Roth options, should they continue to go pre-tax or should they go brokerage?
Yeah. What do you think?
I you already know what I'm going to say.
You're going to say brokerage.
I'm going to say brokerage account.
I'm going to say, let's do some of each. you start with yours.
Well, here's the deal. $1.5 million in 10 years, that's going to be $3 million. In another 10 years, that's going to be $6 million. So they're going to have $6 million in retirement accounts that they don't necessarily need to spend.
Right.
Now they're funding these Roths. They got $100,000, $200,000 in Roth, and they're going to try to fully fund those at $40,000 a year. Right. So then they'll have maybe $1 million hypothetically in Roth accounts.
Right.
But the bulk of the money is going to be this giant retirement account.
Yep. Yep.
Then they have another $100,000 in pension. So if you look at the giant retirement account plus $100,000 in pension, I mean, that's all ordinary income.
Yep.
The Social Security is going to be taxed. Most of it's going to be taxed at ordinary income.
Right.
I mean, their tax time bomb is going to be giant.
It's a big one. I agree.
I would like them to invest that into a brokerage account to get the flexibility that they would have, because I don't know, they live on a farm and she drives a mini truck.
Right.
Maybe the side hustle is 120 grand. So I don't know. Maybe they stop their day jobs and they want to do other things. And I think the capital in a brokerage account that's not stringent to all these rules that the IRS puts on retirement accounts gives them a lot more flexibility.
Yeah. Yeah. That all makes sense. So here's what I would, this is the only thing that gives me a pause.
Okay.
They're already making $400,000 of income. I don't know if the side hustle is on top of that or included, but either way, it's a lot of income. It's a high tax bracket.
Right.
Right. They're probably bumping into the 32% tax bracket.
I agree.
So then it's like, okay, so 32% bracket. Yeah. If I add to my pre-tax, yeah, this is a tax time bomb. No question. 100% agree. So I wouldn't necessarily do that fully, but it's just, I don't know. There's just something about paying a lot of taxes in high brackets as a CPA that gives me a little bit of heartburn.
Yeah.
So because of that, I probably would do some of each. How much of each? I'm not sure. I think I'd have to run some projections.
Sure.
Figure this out. But I would be inclined to do a little of both, I think. And they already have $500,000 in a brokerage, which is a great start. I would keep adding to it. But I don't know.
Guessing she's a teacher and, you know, the kids are going to burn her out.
Could be.
Because most people don't have the luxury as they have in regards to retirement plans right now.
Yeah.
Because she's got a 403B and a 457 plan. So she can double up on those.
Yes. Right.
And then she's going to have a giant pension when she retires.
Right.
So those are really good plans.
Yes.
So if let's just say she maxed out the 403B and says, you know what, I'm not going to touch 457. I'm going to put all that extra into the brokerage account.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, you could do that. Here's the other thing that gives me just a little pause, which is they're 43.
Yep.
She wants to work 20 years.
Yep.
So let's say retire at 63. Then you got 12 years to do Roth conversions, assuming current day law.
Yes.
Which is a big assumption. I know you had to cut you off before you said that. But assuming that the laws are still the same in 20 years from now, that you could do Roth conversions, they will likely be in lower brackets and have an opportunity to do some pretty big conversions.
Sure. Yeah. But then they're going to blow through all that liquidity that they have in the brokerage account.
I agreed.
So,
yeah, it's a tricky one. I think for me personally, I'd be inclined to do some of both. How much I would do, I would have to give that some more thought than just a quick read.
She's doing awesome. I mean, the family's doing awesome. Congratulations. You're 43 and you're in the top probably 1% of individuals that have assets.
Yeah, this is a 1% scenario, Gigi. So good for you.
I mean, at $400,000 of income, don't get me wrong, is a ton of income. So first of all, you know, you guys are doing really well from an income perspective. But the savings rate to get to $2.5 million, two homes all paid off, plus a mini truck?
Yeah.
I mean, at 43?
It's incredible.
Awesome. Way to go. Let's see. Hi, gentlemen and Andy.
Hello.
Love the show, and thank you for all of your spitballing over the years. I'm going to retire early at 51. Have enough savings to make it to 59 and a half. At that point, I will have depleted my savings and therefore start pulling from my IRA accounts. I budget in some Roth conversions during the age 52 to 59 years, but I'll probably still be 50% Roth, 50% traditional when I hit 59 and a half. Okay, I'd like to continue doing Roth conversions after age 60. But to do so, I'll have to sell additional assets from my IRA to pay the taxes. I understand the huge benefits of conversions, but if I have less money working for me in the market in order to do the conversions, that would offset some of the future benefits of converting in the first place. Is there a break-even analysis where I can plug in certain assumptions like rate of return and loss opportunity costs, tax pulled out of the market? I'd love to hear your spitball analysis on this topic. Gotta go. It's my time for a shot.
Yeah, you were thinking
different kind of shot.
I was thinking a different type of shot there. It's time for my shot. I've got 350 yards left. Gonna hit my 5-iron. Carl Speckler.
Huh? Carl, you can hit a 5-iron more than 350, can't you?
Oh man. I didn't know Carl was this young. I thought Carl was like crotchety old, like 70-year-old man.
I thought Carl was younger.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, Caddyshack reference.
Yeah.
I think.
Well,
yeah, he's likely to be our age, Joe, just based on that.
yeah, I would
Very.
say.
Yeah.
I'd say so
Yeah,
too.
very young and spry.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, I thought he was younger.
Yes. All righty.
Okay, break even. What's the break even, Joe?
Well, if he's pulling money from his retirement account to pay the tax, then you got a whole different kind of calculation.
Yep.
If you're paying the tax outside of the IRA, and if you're in the same tax bracket, there is no break even. You break e you broke even day one.
Okay, so explain that. Why is that?
All right.
Here we go.
If you keep the money in a retirement account, people say that compounding money on more dollars will give you more dollars.
Which is true.
Unless it's in a retirement account that when you pull it out, you have to pay tax.
Okay, that's also true.
So if you look at your account balance, Alan, he's going to have $1 million in his 401k plan because Big Al's got a big wallet. And
And
let's say,
so does Carl.
and then I'm going to look at my account balance, and I don't nearly have as much money as Alan. So I look at my account balance, and it says $750,000, but my dollars are all in Roth. Who has more money?
Yeah.
That's the question. Andy, who do you think?
I'm gonna say it's you, Joe.
Well, I think it might be the same. It's the purchasing power of the dollar of what people need to be thinking about, not necessarily what's on their account statement, because on their account statement in a 401k, it's not all theirs.
Yeah, it depends on the tax
And
bracket.
it's unknown.
Right,
It
which we don't know.
could be a lot, it could be a little.
Yeah.
It doesn't, it's unknown because we don't know where tax rates are going to go in the future.
So in your example, if the federal and state tax rate's 30%, right? So the $1 million, you pull it out, you pay 30% tax, 300,000, you get 700,000, you take 700,000 out of a Roth, it's the same number, right? So that's the calculation you have to think about.
Right. And so if I do a conversion and pay the tax, well, then I get rid of the tax right now because I know the tax is going to come. And so then it's the assumptions of what you're running of what the tax rates are going to be.
Right.
So it's like buying your partnership out early. All right. And you want to do it sooner than later because the more compounding effect that it has in a retirement account, more dollars are in the retirement account. And guess what? More of those dollars are going to be subject to more tax.
Right.
So, I mean, in a very high level type of analysis, that's what you got to be thinking about. But Carl now is, he's doing some crazy ass planning though. He's thinking about conversions in like 12 years. I'm like, bro, just play golf and relax. I mean, I could just imagine this guy's spreadsheet.
Right.
It's like, it would be insane. I don't know. Look, why don't you write back when you turn 62 and say, should I do a conversion and pay the tax out of the conversion?
There's a lot of variables,
Too
right?
many.
And so the first one, here's the reason why we're punting on this. So the first one is we don't know what the tax rates are going to be in 12 years. We have no idea.
No idea what's going to be in 2 years.
We don't know, will Roth conversions still be available in 12 years,
Right.
right? We don't know if you're putting money into, well, right now, if you're converting, or if you're not converting, are you spending money that all these, what kind of rate of return are you getting in a Roth versus the non-Roth?
Or what's your investment strategy right now?
Right.
Is it all in one stock and the thing could probably blow up? And then guess what? You might not have enough money just to live off of, let alone doing Roth conversions.
You know, sometimes we say get the money to Roth and then have your more aggressive asset classes like stocks, like blue chip stocks, S&P, or maybe small value, whatever it may be, international, whatever it may be.
Whenever it may be.
Yes,
Is that the word of the day?
that is. But sometimes people hear, okay, you know what? I like Apple stock or whatever the stock of the month is,
Sure.
right? And they go all in. And in 20 years, you might be very happy. And you also might be very disappointed
Sure.
because you paid all this tax and Apple or Tesla or whoever, Netflix, they had their run. They haven't done very well, or maybe they even went down over 20 years, and then you're in a worse spot. So if you want to do this, the investment properly in a Roth, make sure you're diversified with enough stocks so you're okay.
How do you create income that will last your entire retirement, whatever it may be? As we plan today, we face a very different retirement landscape than our parents saw. We're living longer, and we may need to rely on that retirement income for much longer. Go to the podcast show notes to watch how to create a steady stream of retirement income on YMYW-TV and download the companion Retirement Income Strategies Guide for free. Find out from Joe and Big Al how to calculate how much you'll need in retirement, learn about fixed income sources, total return options with guest senior financial advisor Matt Balderston, and other creative approaches to generating the income you'll need after you stop working. The Retirement Income Strategies Guide explains how to answer five questions you need to ask yourself before you retire. It outlines the sources of income available for you in retirement, how to maximize your Social Security benefits, and how to develop a retirement income strategy that meets your needs. Click the link in the description of today's episode in your favorite podcast app to go to the show notes, watch YMYW-TV on creating a steady stream of retirement income, and download the Retirement Income Strategies Guide for free.
We got Howdy, Big Al, Joe, Andy.
I like the accent. Jeffy from Texas.
I can't wait to move to Texas.
I know.
I think it's actually pronounced Jefe. But
Jefe.
Jefe?
Jefe or Jefe?
Well, that's
J E F E.
Is it Jeffy, Texas, or is it Jeffy from Texas?
It could be if the
that is their first name.
Espanol pronunciation would be Jefe.
Okay.
Yes.
First things first, not too many drinks. Oh, okay. I don't like. Oh, there's not too many drinks I don't like. Oh,
now Jeff, suddenly he's Joe's kind of
right.
guy.
No, you little sneaky little dog, you. But my go-to at home is a little rye old-fashioned. My wife was also known as Big Al.
How about that?
Well, it's not a Jeffy and Big Al. He's not an avid drinker, but occasionally enjoys a beer, champagne, or wine. I drive a 2013 Infiniti SUV hand-me-down from my wife. My wife drives a 2022 Toyota 4Runner. There's a little classic Mercedes in the garage that needs a lot more attention than I want to give it. My question involves the mega backdoor Roth. All right. Super mega backdoor.
Okay.
The Megatron. The garage door.
Yeah. As names we've come up with. You won't find it.
You got it, Wikipedia or Investopedia. All right. I recently started to make contributions to my 401k plan at work to the after-tax portion with the idea of taking an in-service distribution periodically. The plan allows it once a quarter. And then roll that into my Roth IRA at Fidelity. I have a Roth at Fidelity currently open with a zero balance. My plan doesn't allow for a distribution in contribution to a Roth within the plan. I currently have a small amount in traditional IRA at Fidelity. Will I need to convert the existing amount in the traditional IRA to a Roth this year when I roll this after-tax money into the Roth? What do I do with the small amount of gains that will be in the after-tax account? My wife has a traditional IRA as well. This will not be an issue with this mega backdoor strategy.
Will this not be an issue?
No. Appreciate all your spitballs and really enjoy your podcast. Keep up the great work. All right. So here's the issue with Jeffy.
Cap.
He's got after-tax dollars in a 401k plan.
Right. Which then allows you to put those dollars into a Roth IRA.
Yeah. Or you could move it into the Roth 401k plan.
You can do that. We call that mega backdoor, whatever you want to call it, but it's an after-tax contribution to 401k that allows you to put it into a Roth IRA or the Roth portion of your 401k.
Roth IRA contributions are $7,000 if you're over 50, $6,000 if you're under. And so there's income limitations to a Roth IRA contribution. There is no income limitations to 401k contributions. So his plan allows him to do the standard 401k contribution and put additional dollars in. Doesn't get a tax benefit from it. It's an after-tax contribution.
That's right.
But allows those after-tax dollars from his contribution into that plan to then convert it to a Roth IRA. Since it's after-tax, there's no tax on the conversion.
Right.
So he's excited to do this. He's getting confused with like the pro rata rules.
Yeah.
Because he has a little amount in his IRA. He doesn't have a balance in his Roth. It doesn't matter. You can move it into the Roth 401k component in an interplan conversion in your plan. If your plan doc allows. That's what our plan does here at our
Yeah, it does. But this says my plan doesn't allow for a distribution of contribution to the Roth within the plan.
It says, then move it into the Roth.
Yeah. So just roll it to a Roth IRA.
Yeah.
And you don't have to touch your traditional.
There's no pro rata rules in the mega back door.
No, you just put it. Now, you will have some, if the after tax has gained some money, there'll be tax on that part, right? But the majority of it will be tax free.
So $20,000 after tax, because he can only do it quarterly.
Yeah.
So that $20,000 is $22,000. He moves the $22,000 into the Roth IRA. There's $2,000 of tax to get $22,000 into the Roth.
Yeah, and you just pay that out of your brokerage account or checking account, whatever it may be.
Or just withhold it.
Have more withholding, whatever. Yep.
All right. They're IRAs, individual retirement accounts.
Right.
401ks and IRAs are two totally different animals.
Sure.
So they're very similar, but they have different rules. They have different regulations, 401k rules and IRA rules. They're totally separate. So he's thinking, all right, well, since I have an IRA balance and I move money of an after-tax component into a Roth IRA, is there a pro rata issue? Because like the backdoor right. Roth contribution or conversion has pro rata rules. So if I make an after-tax Roth IRA contribution and then convert it to a Roth IRA, or if I make an after-tax IRA contribution and convert it to a Roth IRA, if I have no other IRA balances, that conversion is tax-free. If I have other IRA balances, I have to add up all of my IRAs and then look at the pro rata of what I have in after-tax versus pre-tax, and then that's my exclusion in regards to taxes.
Yep. Well said. And the 401k world, as you just said, is different than the IRA world. So you don't commingle those for purposes of the pro rata and aggregation. Thank you.
You're not aggregating 401k and IRA.
Yeah.
You're not doing pro rata to 401k IRA. You're only doing the aggregation to IRA IRA.
Yep.
Welcome back, Schmitty. I haven't heard from him in a while.
He's no.
Still chilling in the villages.
Yeah. Down in Florida.
Hey, Andy, Joe, now. I came up with something new for you guys to chew on, but first, the most important stuff. Still driving that black 2019 Yamaha Quiet Tech golf cart every day here in the villages.
Yeah.
Oh, Schmitty's.
Yeah, that's pretty fine looking.
Yeah. My latest drink of choice is tequila on the rocks.
Oh, all right.
So here we go. Here's this question. He's like, I'm self-employed. And over the last few years, I've been doing Roth conversions from my solo 401k to a Roth IRA. Ever since my balance in the solo 401k went above $250,000, I had to file IRS form 5500. So he did the EZ, 5500 EZ, for one participant. Last year, I started 2023 with a balance below $250,000 in my solo 401k. And by the end of 2023, this balance was zero.
Okay.
Being that my solo 401k balance never touched the 250 or above in 2023, assuming I'm not going to be required to file the form 5500. FYI, I'm not terminating my solo 401k as I'm still self-employed in using my solo 401k for large contributions, then immediately rolling them to my Roth IRA, thus leaving my solo 401k with a zero balance on January 1st and a zero balance on December 31st. Being I'm not terminating my solo 401k, I'm assuming that I'm not required to file the 5500. Am I correct? However, I do assume that I would be required to file a final IRS form 5500 when I do eventually terminate the solo 401k, correct? What do you guys think? Thank you always, Schmitty.
Yeah.
Okay. Why doesn't Schmitty just open up a Roth solo 401k so you don't have to do that? But then he would have to file the 5500.
Still got to do it. Yeah. So let's explain what this is.
Okay.
When you have a company pension plan, if it gets
set a pension plan,
yeah,
defined contribution plan, 401k.
Okay. All right. Defined contribution plan, company. Okay. Very good. Defined contribution plan in a company. You have to file form 5500 in many cases, most cases. Now, if you have a solo 401k, which is what, so that just means you have a company 401k plan, but it's only you. There's a single participant. It could be you and your spouse. That would still count as a solo. But in a case of a solo 401k, you do not have to file this IRS form 5500 unless your account balance goes above $250,000. And once it does, you got to file that form. Now, in this example, do you have to file it the next year because it started the year below 250 and it still was 250 the whole year? To the letter of the law, the answer is no. However, I personally would still file it because I just don't want the IRS saying, where's your 5,500? We're expecting it. And then you got to go through all that. So I would still file it myself. It's
a
like,
pretty easy form.
It's like a postcard. Smitty, go ahead and file that postcard.
He's doing all this rigmarole with the conversions and, you know, putting all this money into it and taking it out.
Just
file the 5,500.
Just do it.
And then have a shot of tequila.
Right. But, yeah, you don't really have to. I just, you know, best practice, I would do it just because I just don't want a letter years from now with penalties. However, your statement is correct. If it's below 250 for the whole year, do you have to file? Answer is no. I still would file it. On the final year of your 5,500 or the final year of your solo 401k, do you have to file the 5,500? Even if your balance is below 250,000, the answer is yes. It is a hassle. You have to get a federal ID number for that, but the IRS says that you have to.
All right, that's it for us today. Thanks, Annie. Welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Al, thanks.
Yes.
Now you're heading off again?
Pretty soon.
Yeah.
In about an hour. No.
All right. I'll be here holding down the fort. We'll see you guys next week. Show's Cut Your Money Well.
We've got Moulin Rouge, the mini truck versus a Ram truck, shooting 350 yards with a 5-iron, the Villages, and tequila in the derails at the end of the episode, so stick around. This show would not be a show without you, and we appreciate it when you share YMYW with other people like you to help us grow the show. Sharing your honest reviews and ratings for Your Money, Your Wealth helps too, especially in Apple Podcasts, but Amazon, Audible, CastBox, Good Pods, Pandora, Player FM, Pocket Casts, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Podknife, and Spotify all accept them too. Your Money, Your Wealth is presented by Pure Financial Advisors. While a retirement spitball analysis from Joe and Big Al is a great starting point, a free financial assessment with the experienced professionals at Pure is a comprehensive review of your entire financial situation to uncover more strategies to help you have a successful retirement. To schedule yours, click the free financial assessment banner in the podcast show notes at yourmoneyyourwealth.com or call 888-994-6257. Meet in person at any of our locations around the country or online via Zoom. No matter where you are, the Pure team will work with you to create a detailed plan especially tailored to your retirement needs and goals. Pure Financial Advisors is a registered investment advisor. This show does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors are advised not to rely on any information contained in the broadcast in the process of making a full and informed investment decision.
How are you, Andy?
I'm very well. Back fresh from New York City. Had a great time and actually got to see a show on Broadway for the first time. So that was fun. Moulin Rouge.
Ooh, nice
with
stuff.
Boy George playing the role of Harold Zeidler. It was fun.
Oh,
Harold Zeidler.
That would be cool.
He's the ringmaster at Moulin Rouge.
Yeah. So. I've actually been to Moulin Rouge for real. But
me
I haven't,
too. Yeah.
Oh, you like the real Moulin Rouge
in Paris.
Paris.
Yeah.
Paris.
See?
Or
we.
All right. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Got back too, huh?
Yeah, I
you
got back from
tired.
Boston. Yeah, I'm a little tired. Yeah.
It's fresh in the morning, brother.
I didn't have enough coffee yet, but I'll see how this goes.
All right. What the hell's a mini truck?
I'm about to show you because she actually says, show him a picture.
Yeah, I don't know what a mini truck is either.
You'll recognize it when you see it. This is a mini truck.
Oh,
that is mini. Okay.
That's pretty cool. 1991 Suzuki Carry. Is that does she have a Suzuki mini truck?
She doesn't specify what she's got, but there's Daihatsu, Mitsubishi, Suzuki's, all mini trucks, but it's got a big cab and a little tiny truck bed.
Yeah, it's
I don't
it
know.
Is.
That looks like a pretty big bed. It has a mini cab, but a big bed.
Well, mini cab, but I don't know about the size. It looks like a small bed to me, but it doesn't go up very high. We'll put it that way.
My hubby drives a Ram, and for the record, our truck beds are the same size.
Oh, there
Here's
you
Here's the Ram.
Oh, okay.
Yep. See, the bed is, I know my beds. What does she do with the mini truck?
It's a good question.
Where do you have to live to have a mini truck? I guess she lives in Illinois.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I actually did have a Toyota truck at one point, one of those little ones.
Okay.
Because as an accountant, most accountants drove them because they were cost effective and never broke down.
You got it. 355 iron. That would be
Quite a shot.
That would be.
I don't think the top golfers. Dustin Johnson couldn't even do that.
Dustin Johnson's not a top golfer anymore. He's my age.
He's from a distance, from someone who hits the ball far.
Yeah,
he's right in the top.
Yeah, it's the highest. A lot of stuff goes on in the villages, Al.
Is that right?
A lot of stuff goes down.
Do you know?
Oh, I know. Never been. Never been.
Just what you heard.
Just, you know, I'm up to speed on the villages.
Okay.
You're a tequila drinker, Big Al?
No, I really am not.
How about you, Andy?
Oh, heck no.
No.
One bad experience and never doing that again.
Although I will say, I just went down to Mexico to build a home with an organization called Homes of Hope. And there's a bar near the facility that we stayed at called Plan B.
Okay.
Which is a great name for a bar, sure. I think. And they had some tequila that our friend Susan had, and I had a little bit. That was smooth. That's actually, I would drink that.
Wow.
I'm not sure what it was, although I understand it was like $60 a bottle.
$60 a bottle?
Yeah.
Now that's garbage.
Well, in Mexico, that's a pretty premium.
Is it?
I don't know.
I think like, what's high? I don't know. I would think high-end tequila is a couple $100.
Yeah. Well, that's what he said, and it was really good.
No. Oh, all right. Yeah. I can't tell you the last time I had tequila.
Looking online, if just searching high-end tequila, I see like $300 a bottle.
Yeah, like Clase Azul.
Well, hold on. I mean, so this is Tijuana. This is called Plan B.
So what, you could buy a bottle of tequila at the bar and then just like put it on the bar and then you get a shot glass like the Wild West?
I think so.
You know what I'm talking about?
I think so.
You just slam through the saloon doors and away you go.
Yeah, right? You take the cork with your teeth and then you pour yourself a shot glass.
Yeah. You're not allowed to walk in unless you got a holster with bullets and...
I've never, you know, that sounds interesting. I should go down to Plan B.
Plan B.
Yeah, buy a bottle of tequila and just sit there.
Just sit there?
That's my Plan B in life.
Yeah, bartender Chris. Yeah. He actually offered Susan a job down there.
Oh, wow.
Weekend bartender.
No, she should go for it.
Yep.